Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Thursday in the loop. Biggie feeling good. Lopez feeling good. Mm-hmm. Let's turn it to the line and see how our guest is feeling on this Thursday. He is a Super Bowl winning scout. And sometimes he'll break out that Green Bay Packers ring and let you see it. It's heavy, I'll tell you that. His name is Brian Broaddus. Broaddus, what's happening, man?
Hey, Reggie, John, how we doing today, guys?
Doing pretty well, man. We're doing pretty well. 3 weeks out from the NFL draft in order to add some players and super excited about it. So I wanted to pick your brain in some way. I think it's a question I've asked you, but I kind of want to circle back on it, especially now that you've gotten deeper into your evaluation of this particular draft class. Like, where do the kind of tiers break down on, like, quality of talent? Because I know that there's, like, a few blue chips, maybe, like, two, three, four blue chips. And then maybe, I don't know, into the early teens when it comes to first-round talent. But then it seems like there's a large pool of maybe, like, second-round kind of talent per se. Am I reading that right? What is the tier kind of line up?
Yeah, I've got darn near 200 players scouted myself. And so probably got another 15 in me I'm going to try and get done. And the way this draft has fallen for me is I have 15 first-round grades is what I have. And you're right. But there's certain positions that our teams are going to feel really, really good about when it comes to the running back group, when it comes to the defensive tackle group, and then the edge group and the corner group. I think there's quality throughout that. And then there's actually at the top, there's quality at safety. So it might not have the potential for the star players. There's probably, you know, like you said, two or three guys that you would consider that. And then it kind of falls into, this is a really, really different draft because of these offensive tackles. We haven't had the tackles that we've had in past drafts. And some of these kind of an exercise you always try and figure out is, okay, where would some of these players be in previous drafts? And, you know, that's the exercise that we're kind of working through right now. And you find yourself, you know, say, well, okay, well, you know, there's two or three guys in the last two drafts I'd rather have an offensive tackle than this guy, but this guy's the first overall tackle. So, yeah, it's, you know, the drafts always hated this when scouts would say, oh, it's not a deep draft, you know. You know, your job's to find players, mm-hmm. you know. Stop bitching about it and, you know, go do your jobs. And, you know, it's, you know, there is always going to be the Puka Nakuas or somebody like that we didn't think very highly of and all of a sudden turns into like a star player. And, you know, that's the job of a scout. But, you know, this time of year you kind of, you hear a lot of complaining about, well, certain positions are this and certain positions are that. I'm encouraged by, you know, the team that I cover here, you know, with the Cowboys, that they have some depth at some certain positions that they're absolutely going to need.
I've been wanting to ask you this. You know, we all know that it's lying season and there's a lot of subterfuge and, you know, things going on when you hear GMs talking and even combine interviews and Senior Bowl interviews. But to me, once you get to the top 30 interview, it carries a little more weight. Does it?
Yeah, that seems to be. I'll tell you another thing, John, that you can, if you're following who the Texans, if you're starting to hear information about who the Texans' assistant coaches are going to work out, that's another thing that kind of tips me off. The 30 visit things are very, very good. They have a thing going on here. They have Dallas Day, with all the players that are really the Dallas and Fort Worth, the Metroplex area, where the Cowboys, I mean, they have Ashton Jeanty in for that thing. Mm-hmm. So, they don't even have to use a 30 visit because Ashton Jeanty's from this area, that they could just bring him over. There's certain cities that have a great advantage of this. Los Angeles, Atlanta, Miami, Dallas, these cities that have large players, a large number of players come from that area. And so, yeah, the 30 visits are really, really good. Any type of bringing guys in to work out will tell you a lot about who they might be looking at. Maybe not at the top of the board, but maybe on day three, when it gets down to like, okay, we're looking for traits. We're looking, well, wait a minute, we brought this guy in. And there might be some of these kids that you work out that didn't go to the combine. So if you like them, you're like, okay, I'm going to take an opportunity to work them out. I'm going to get a physical on them, and then I'm going to be able to have a tag on the board where I know how they stack up with everybody else. So, yeah, but pay attention to where your assistant coaches are going. And the coordinators, that's cool, but assistant coaches going to work guys out is a sign that they really do like a kid.
We're talking to Brian Broaddus, Super Bowl winning draft scout here in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Josh Simmons is the tackle out of Ohio State. He's a player that we've seen mocked to the Texans a lot. And I mean, if they were to take a tackle, obviously the tape, I imagine, looks really, really good on him. How concerned are you about that torn patellar tendon, particularly for an offensive lineman, a position that we don't really see or we don't have much data on with that?
Yeah, and Josh Simmons is my favorite tackle in the draft. And if I was Dallas, I'd absolutely take him at 12, he could. I mean, he is that. I've talked to one of the advantages I have of been working in the National Football League for as long as I did was to know trainers and doctors around the league. And everybody gave me the thumbs up as far as, might be limited during the OTA stuff. Maybe you want to look at that. But as far as the training camp and all that, should be good to go. But this is a big-time player. You watch him play, he's 6'5", he's 317, he's got explosiveness with his footwork, he really gets off the ball well. It doesn't matter if he's going forwards or backwards, he's really smooth. There's just no wasted motion or movement with this guy. He's really effortless in the way he plays, the body position, the balance. It's just so natural to him. And, he's learned to have to play both tackle spots. So you get him in the second level, he's a nightmare for defenders to have to deal with. He sees targets, he finishes. I mean, there's just so much to really, really like about his game. And, if the Texans were to draft somebody like this, I would, trust me, when we do the draft coverage the 3 days that we do it, here for 105.3 The Fan and DallasCowboys.com, I would applaud that pick with a lot of gusto.
Are running backs being looked at differently these days than they were even just maybe a year or two ago?
In what way, John?
In terms of people like, oh, you can get one in the third round. Oh, you can get one in the fourth round.
Yeah, you're not, like you said, I think there's people that have really taken this positional value stuff to a toxic level. But I'm 61 years old. I come from an era where running backs were important, And so when people talk about running backs to me, I always look for the three down guys. I always look for the guys that can, that have the ability to carry the ball consistently, to be kind of a workhorse guy. I look for the guy that can catch. More importantly, in this day and age, I look for a guy that can pass protect. You have to be aware you know, you have to, if you're just a one down back or, you know, two down back, that really doesn't do me any good. But these guys, there's several guys, like, for example, you know, Ashton Jeanty, everybody knows about his situation, what he can do. The kid Henderson from Ohio State would be a guy, a really good example of a guy that's a three down back. You know, there's guys like, for example, Blue at Texas would be a guy that, you know, is explosive. He catches, but he's going to need work on the pass protection stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that people, they just, you know, in this draft particularly, depending on what kind of back you want, like there's the 5'9" back, there's the 5'11" back, there's the 6-foot back, there's a, you know, they've got guys with varying degrees of what they can do. Some guys are really explosive, some guys are extremely tough, some guys are just really good catchers. You know, it's a draft where if you want to say, okay, we'll wait till, I don't think you want to go too far past like the fourth round in this draft. If you had to go into the fifth, yeah, you probably could grab one. But boy, the sweet spot for this thing to me is that second and third round.
Okay. We here in Houston, obviously, offensive line, adding talent to the offensive line room feels like it's very important. But also, you still have probably a starting ZY receiver spot that is open and that you would love to have a young talent. I mean, if you are looking at, you know, the Texans taking at 25 and then obviously having, 58 in the second round, would you rather go, if a wide receiver, like let's say Ibuka or Golden is available to you at 25, would you rather go wide receiver, one of those guys at 25, and then circle back around and add some offensive line talent, whether a guard or a tackle, in the second round? Or would you do that in the opposite direction where you pick up one of these starting caliber first round offensive linemen and then see what you can add wide receiver wise afterwards?
Yeah, go for your offensive lineman first, Reggie, and then turn around and swing that thing in the second round is what you would do. I think what happens, the questions about the offensive line are more as you get down the board. Mm-hmm. You know, and to me, you know, if the names, like I say, the Simmons, the Campbell, the Banks, the further you go down, Mimbao from Missouri, the further you go down that list, the harder it is to really to attack and pinpoint that guy and say, that's our guy. I would go get Simmons and then flip this thing in the second round. Besh from TCU, Williams from TCU, you know, there's some guys, the Goldens and Ibuka and those guys are likely going to be gone, but I feel like I could get the quality, not maybe the level of play at, you know, with that, with the wide receiver, but I know I can't get it at offensive tackle mm-hmm. unless I pick it high. So flip that thing is what I would do.
Real quick, what about guard, though? Because, I mean, a lot of guys...
Yeah. See, that's the thing, too, guys. There's everybody's projecting tackles to guards. You know, there's guys like Booker from Alabama, who's just a plug-and-play guard. You know, that's guy Jackson from Ohio State is another one of those guys that... I don't know if either one of those guys would get to you at your second pick, but there's some guys, some tackles that people are projecting that could be that, you know, okay, well, we can move him inside to play guard. Gray Zabel from North Dakota State is that kind of guy. Very versatile guy, could probably play all three positions. Might be in that area where you guys are picking in the second.
And here's more of another sort of a big picture question for you, just your experience at work here. Mm-hmm. I love when people say so-and-so's draft stock is falling. And we were mm-hmm. talking about this a little bit yesterday on the show. Draft stock according to who? I mean, you know, it's like Shedeur Sanders, you know, people are talking about him. We've seen a lot mm-hmm. of news in the last day that, oh, the Browns and the Giants may not draft a quarterback at all. I mean, that's just all projection. How much do internally, you know, does an organization, you know, fall in line with what people are projecting?
Well, see, that's the problem, John, is what you hear that. Trust me, I've been in that room where, you know, we hear what, you know, the projections are and what people are talking about. Media scouts tend to be off until we get to like the very end. And then what happens is media scouts then start to talk to buddies around the league, people they know, and they get an idea that, like, oh, wait a minute, so-and-so's really not this good. You know, we've mm-hmm. seen that from a couple of different times. You know, the Texas A&M kid, the Scouting, it was like a top guy, like a top, top 10 guy. And now you don't see him on any mock drafts. Mm-hmm. So there's been people like been a lot of projections from media scouts. And then all of a sudden the media scouts then start to talk to the teams, and the teams are like, bro, you got that guy way too high.
Yeah.
You know, and then, but there's things in the media scouts that we don't know. Like there's a lot of questions about Luther Burden from Missouri, the wide receiver. A lot of people have him as a first round guy, but then you start to talk to teams, it's like, well, you need to check the character there. Mm-hmm. See, we don't have the advantage of character check nor medical. Yeah. We're just looking at whatever tape and stuff we can get. So we're putting him in that spot. So when you see a guy's stock is dropping, it's, well, the media scouts put him way up high here, and then the teams are coming in and saying, well, wait a minute now. You didn't know that the guy had this right. injury, and you didn't know he had this character problem. That's the code word for we got the guy wrong to start with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so defensive tackle is another one of those positions that, you know, it feels like the Texans could add at, but I don't know that that would be take precedence in the first round. Not to say that it couldn't. Can you give me a day two defensive tackle that you have your eye on that you kind of like?
Reggie, correct me. You guys have odd front or even front? When odd, I mean you play right. three-man line or four-man line?
Four-man line.
Okay, you need a one technique, which is a nose tackle, or do you need a three technique, which plays like an upfield
on
the
end? You'd want a one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you want a one. Okay, so you're in luck because this is where this
I feel
is
like
where,
I'm buying a boat right now. Yeah. All right, very good.
No, absolutely. I mean, like I said, you just got to kind of lead me down the path. But, you know, a guy like Taliq Williams from Ohio State, Harmon from Oregon. Yeah, Walker from Kentucky. You know, these are the guys, Collins from Texas, West from Indiana. There are some 320-pound dudes that are these one-technique guys. And this is actually a pretty deep group when you start to talk about the ones and the threes. So if you're looking for a guy that, you know, if you're looking for that one, that kind of that guy that plays head up on the center, plays in the gap between the center and the guard, you've got names that you could absolutely choose from. But you're kind of in a spot where in that second round, there's some people ahead of you that need the same type of guy. So you might be on the tail end of that one technique group there in the second round.
All right. Brian Broaddus, Super Bowl winning scout. Appreciate you jumping on with us. Is Jerry Jones actually going to do this thing where he makes it terrible with Micah Parsons, or is this actually just going
to? Yeah, I honestly, I don't think he knew how to pronounce David Mulligetta's name.
That's what it was. He just didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, would you like to just butcher that and like, and then all of a sudden you're like. I'll say this, though. I don't think you want to mess with David Mulligetta
myself.
No, you do not. I really don't think you want to mess with him because the next thing you know, that guy will be toasting with a bottle of champagne and say, hey, UMFers now know my name, so here we are, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't mess with David Mulligetta. He's damn good at what he does. But I don't think Jerry wanted to attempt to say that name. That's the thing I think happened.
He created more problems for himself. That's how it seems to go, doesn't it? All right. Brian Broaddus, appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. Thank you so much, my man.
Take care, boys.
All right, man. There he is, Brian Broaddus, Super Bowl winning scout. He's run a draft room on one of these instances, so I always appreciate him lending us some of his expertise. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we turn it over to Figgy for the mixtape. What you got?
Yeah, conspiracies and more conspiracies.
Love it.
I want to know some of the craziest conspiracies that you're down with, and I got a couple of them, and I kind of want to get y'all thoughts on them.
All right. Let's a little bit of conspiracy talk next.
Pass the aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Figs in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yep, it's a mixtape in the loop. Sports Radio 610. Figgy holding it down on a Thursday. Happy Thursday to everyone out there. So yesterday we talked about Val Kilmer, the actor that passed away. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people was bringing up his role when he played Jim Morrison in the movie The Doors.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about that movie. And I checked out the movie a little bit yesterday. I didn't get a chance to finish. But he looked just like Jim Morrison.
Exactly.
It's kind of scary a little bit. I seen a couple articles talking about the people that made the movie couldn't tell which one was actual Jim Morrison vocals and vocals.
Really? He was so, okay.
He did the singing.
He was mm-hmm. He was dead set into that character.
No, I knew he did the singing. I just didn't know that he was that good to like really replicate Jim Morrison's voice in that way.
Yeah, he was pretty good from what I saw. But I say that I kind of went down the rabbit hole a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I was watching a lot of his performances. And then I got to the conspiracy parts and I ran across this audio, and I brought it up to y'all a couple weeks ago about how that conspiracy out there that he is still alive and he is living in Syracuse.
Come on, man.
New York.
He's in Syracuse, New York.
Mm-hmm. Doing
as a janitor. I'm glad you said that.
A janitor.
Yeah. So that's kind of out there, and it kind of got me.
What do they have him running from? Because, like, I feel like if you're just, I'm laying low, like, witness protection, you got to be running for something to just, and maybe that's elitist. Yeah, I apologize. Because, you know, there's people that find fulfillment being a janitor and all that. But it just feels like if you were a world-class musician, you're like, nah, I'm just going to live in Syracuse as a janitor and lay low and never let anybody know of my existence.
Yeah.
That feels like you running from something. I don't know that Jim Morrison has that.
Yeah. So this conspiracy started on a documentary on Apple TV called Before the End, Searching for Jim Morrison.
Oh, I am surprised.
So this is on Apple TV. Yeah, this ain't even like a YouTube.
This is that the feels real
like
deal.
That feels like at best a Netflix conspiracy. Yeah. I didn't think Apple TV got into the
mud. I didn't either. But here is CBS 6 in Albany, New York, pretty much breaking down this, not breaking down the conspiracy, but talking about it.
The wild theory about Morrison is circulating online thanks to a documentary out now on Apple TV+. Filmmaker and self-professed Doors superfan Jeff Finn dives into the long-running theory that Morrison faked his death. Morrison was buried before an autopsy was performed, and news of his death was kept secret for 6 days. In his series Before the End, Finn speculates that Morrison faked his death and assumed the identity of a maintenance man named Frank living in Syracuse. Believers say a number of eerie coincidences justify the theory, and Frank was supposedly friends with Doors drummer John Densmore. While Frank admits he's not Jim Morrison, he says if anybody could have pulled off faking their own death, it would have been Morrison. Jim Morrison would be 81 today, and he does have a few real connections to New York. They played Rochester in March of 68. A show in Syracuse the next year was canceled.
That's y'all buying this?
So what? That a concert in Rochester?
He drove through a city in the general area, and that means that he might have wanted to stop down and live here.
You know, I kind of like this place.
So y'all not buying this?
No. No, not in the least bit.
They were starting to get me, though, with the idea of, you know, buried before an autopsy. And I was like, okay, you can maybe get me with this.
Just little stuff like that.
And of course he's
going to
live in New York.
Going, man.
He did one performance, right?
And I say again, people work very, very, very hard to get really famous and really big and really, become a superstar. They don't just say, you know what, I'm done with that. If you don't like the attention, buy an island like Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp lives on an island.
Well, I mean, there's some people that don't like the trappings of fame.
So move away.
The thing is, and I don't think this had nothing to do with Jim Morrison or anything, but when you start talking about, he owed a lot of money to the mob and all this type of stuff, that's when it would be like, okay, I see why he would disappear. But
buy an island. Just go.
The mob go over there to the island.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you'll see him coming.
They will find you.
They'll see him coming. Yeah, money.
I'm not rolling with this either. But but I say that to say also kind of connect with this. Here's another conspiracy that kind of been going around for a little bit too. Tupac is alive conspiracy.
Oh yeah.
I wonder where y'all lay when it comes to this. Because I brought the Jim Morrison little article thing up to somebody that work around here in the office by the name of Melissa Chase. She worked for Mix 96.5. Mm-hmm. And she was so amazed by this because she never heard this theory.
Oh, wow.
In the year of our Lord, 2025?
Yeah, how do you know?
No, she never heard of the Jim Morrison theory.
Oh, okay.
But that brought us to her asking me, do you think Tupac is alive?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hell no, he ain't alive. So this is Melissa Chase right here from Mix 96.5 explaining her Tupac theory.
All right, I 100% think that Tupac is still alive somewhere. And I got to be careful how I'm saying this because I, like most people, am terrified of Suge Knight. But here's the deal. First of all, Tupac's nickname, Machiavelli, he literally nicknamed himself after the guy who wrote about faking your own death to trick your enemies. Absolutely not a coincidence. Second, you don't think it's a little sus that Suge Knight was in the car when the shootout happened and Tupac was in the passenger seat? He went through this traumatizing experience of his friend getting shot at in the car he was driving, being taken to the hospital and put into a coma before being declared dead. Yet he turns around and makes jokes about it later, like maybe Tupac ain't dead. Maybe he's coming back. Come on. Are you really going to do that when you watch your friend getting shot right in front of you? That's not grief. That is a cover up. And lastly, the lack of the body. That whole thing is bizarre. Like, I know that you can rush things through for celebrities, but the fact that Tupac's autopsy allegedly happened immediately and they were able to do a cremation within 24 hours, come on, ain't nobody got connections like that. Plus, no open casket, and anyone who's tried to stalk an ex online knows that you can literally find out anything on the internet. Yet for some reason, even now, almost 30 years later, no one has a photo or a video of the body or the autopsy. Come on. So no, I do not think that Tupac is dead. And honestly, I hope he's having a good time watching himself and his career still flourish from everything with the Coachella hologram versions of him to new music that has come out since his quote passing. And I personally am very excited and hope I am around to see his big return.
Are y'all rolling with this?
No. Although I did find it interesting that she talked about stalking people on the internet. Okay, why she went there? Well, I'm sure there's a story or two.
What are you doing right now? I'm sure there's a story or two. Tupac would be how old at this point?
60-something?
Born in 71?
So 50. He'd be in his 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, four.
I do. I love that she's got the idea of 50-something-year-old Tupac popping back out like, I'm alive. Come to my concert tour that's launching. I'm like, I don't know about that one.
He's just going to tweet something. Psych.
All of a sudden on Twitter. Unbelievable. He's just one of these dudes who has like the fishy picture up, except it's actually Tupac. All this time, you thought I was just Jim.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to get y'all out of here on this other conspiracy. This is the one I'm kind of intrigued by a little bit. The Stevie Wonder conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. This is mine.
That one, we've been talking about that in the hood for a minute.
I'm here. This is the one I'm here for.
Yeah, so here is Shaquille O'Neal. I think this was on TNT, inside the NBA. This was his interaction with Stevie Wonder in the elevator.
We lived in the building on Wilshire. So you park your car and the valet's down there. So I'm already in the building. I'm coming to the lobby. Door opens. It's Stevie Wonder. He comes in, says, what's up, Shaq? Presses the button. Hold it, you sorry. Presses the button, gets up on the floor, bathtub, goes to his room. I went and called every person I knew and told the story. They believe me.
I love the story.
Wait, we got more, though. Right. We got more. Here's Lionel Richie.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've heard the Lionel Richie.
Richie. He was on a late night talk show, and he was talking about his interaction with Stevie Wonder driving.
I go over to his house, and he says, I got a record I want you to hear. So he pulls the cassette, and he says, come go with me in the car. He goes out to the car, and he goes on the driver's side. He said, get it on the passenger side. I get on the passenger side, and then he puts the cassette in, he cranks the car up, and he goes, and he puts it in reverse, and starts down the driveway. He's going down the driveway. I said, Stevie! He goes, I got you.
Wait a minute, we got more.
There's a preponderance of evidence.
We got more. R&B artist by the name of Johnny Gill.
Mm-hmm.
This is him talking about how Stevie Wonder was actually cold at air hockey.
I beat all three of us, whipped our ass in air hockey.
I'll never forget Stan. Oh man, Steve was the master of air hockey. And I remember telling Keith
that is a visual sport.
Yes, I told Keith, I was like, yo, man, we can't tell nobody this.
Right.
He beat all three of us. And I said, I don't care what you say. You can see.
Right.
Because I swear you do this and hit the table, this and his reflexes so quickly, and he was boom, boom, and serving right back. And I'm going, yo, man, there's no way, man. There's no way.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I told Keith in the promise we would never tell nobody.
So the three people that he beat was Johnny Gill, Keith Sweat, and Gerald LeVert. In the air hockey. Rolling with this?
Yes. I've been rolling with it. Here's the problem, right? I understand that there's like legal levels of blindness.
That's
and
where
stuff
I go
that,
with it. Yeah.
But I mean, that's the reasonable part. I don't want to be reasonable here. I want to have fun. Mm-hmm. The thing that I keep thinking of, like I'm willing to buy this, especially because it's largely harmless, right? There's some conspiracies where you get to and you're like, all right, this is actually like an issue with some issues. Mm-hmm. It's largely harmless. I just don't know why. Like I can get myself to the idea that he's been faking for all this time. To what end?
He's faking. I fall in line with he's blind. He's legally blind.
We never say legally blind whenever it comes to Stevie Wonder.
And to be fair, he has handlers in such a way where it makes it seem as though
blind.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Because you could be blind, like legally blind, as far as like seeing shadows and stuff like
I'm
that.
Saying. That's what I'm saying. I just love the Shaq. What's up, Shaq?
Hit the floor he was going to.
What's up, Shaq?
It remains hilarious to me.
What's up, Stevie?
I had never heard that Johnny Gill one until recently. Yeah. So just more evidence to put into my pocket when it comes to that.
And there's so many more stories of this too, by the way. People just like
him looking at the big screen at a basketball game. The big board. Or
just sitting courtside at a basketball game. Yeah. Catching
or him talking to Carmelo Anthony. Said, hey, I like your game, man. I like watching you play.
Exactly. He used the word watching, which of course is going to throw people over. All right. From the 916, they believe Bruce Lee is still alive. Someone said,
I never heard that one.
Yeah.
832 said, who's going to tell Melissa about a Keefy D? Yeah, man.
Yeah.
He's copped to it at this point.
Yeah,
Gus and Katie got to the one where he was caught on TV catching a mic that was dropping.
Oh, yeah.
On the stage. Yeah, there's a lot of these. This is my favorite, again. But I appreciate you bringing that to the table. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we get ready to hand it off to the fellas of the drive, Clinton, Ron. But before we get there, is this possibly the biggest, tool or the biggest check mark that the Cougars are going to have against Duke this weekend? We'll talk about what that is next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atatula.
Yep, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging with us all Thursday long. We're about getting ready to hand it over to the fellas of the drive, Clint, Ron, T-Mill. They'll get going here shortly. Before we do that, though, super excited for 2 days from now when the Cougs will get back in action. They'll get Final Four ready. In fact, they took the bus out to San Antonio yesterday.
The bus.
Correct? The bus.
So a couple of people brought
that
up.
For real? Like, is this actually an issue for folks that they took a bus just under 200 miles to San Antonio?
Reggie and I are on the same page on this. I thought that was the preferred method for this trip. And I think about it. You got to take a bus to the airport. It's like a 35-40 minute flight. You're going to be packing and unpacking. Then another bus to the hotel. Just take a bus, man.
Yeah, I feel like... hours. Now, of course, I always do the thing.
But the flight is like 45 minutes.
It is.
Not even.
I mean, 45 would be going further, right?
45 be going to like New Orleans.
I don't even know if you reach cruising altitude to get to San Antonio, really.
Did you go up and then come
down? I'm not even sure you get all the way up to the top of that. But I do wonder, would it have been like going to the airport, dealing with all that? Like, and I know that they're not going through the airport like we going through the airport, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I feel like by the time you do that, you're probably, a third of the way to San Antonio anyways?
Yeah.
I felt like this was not that big of a deal. I didn't think that had to do anything with the program. Although, I mean, I'm sure Houston is, and we talked to Eddie Nunez some weeks back, or was it last month? They're wanting to continue to prepare themselves for the next era of college sports and making sure that they have the proper funding, especially when it comes to like revenue share that is fast approaching in college sports. In fact, speaking of with the revenue share, It is funny because it seems like schools that that don't have football might actually benefit from revenue share, because there's a certain amount of money that you have to share amongst your athletes.
Yeah.
And if you're not sharing it amongst like a large amount of football players, sometimes you wonder if you're going to have more money to go around for some of these basketball players. I'll be interested to see how that works in the college space, but neither here nor there.
Yeah.
They took the bus, they head out to San Antonio, and they're going to face off against the Duke Blue Devils, which looks like, I mean, probably the stiffest competition that they'll face all season long, especially the way that they're playing. Somebody said buses for bonding. This team, I don't know, can this team bond even more?
Can they bond any more than they have?
They seem like, going all the way back to like running on the track in the offseason and
yeah,
such.
Yeah. No, I had no problem. Even New Orleans, I might have said, hey, you should have taken a plane. Because that's a 5.5. We just recently did it.
We did.
Yeah.
Although it went quick. Although I was not the one driving, but it went real quick.
So, yeah, but San Antonio, yeah, no problem. But they are in San Antonio, and I brought this up with you. I'm old enough to remember, you know, this U of H team in Final Fours. Now, Elvin Hayes era is a little sketchy for me. I was just a kid, but I know, you know, they didn't have the best coach. All due respect, Guy V. Lewis, you're a legend, you're a Hall of Famer. They didn't have the best coach in the Final Four. There was one guy named John Wooden there.
I think I've heard of him.
There was a guy.
He's all right.
There was a guy named John Wooden
there. How many championships? Like at some point,
11?
Yeah, I was like, once we got to double digits, I was just like, he has a lot. That's the number he has.
I think
lot.
He was on a run of 4 in a row at that time.
Oh, that's cute.
So, yes, Guy V, legend. Then you go into the 80s, and I do remember this very well. I was covering those teams when I was an undergrad at A&M. I was covering the tournament, covering Cougars basketball and all that stuff. Phi Slamma Jamma, man. You know, maybe the best assemblage of talent. That the U of H has ever seen, including this year. But Jim Valvano, slowing the game down.
Was Jim Valvano, because this
he was
is
a great coach.
All right, he was viewed as that. In that point, it wasn't the NC State championship that then put him over where people viewed him as a great coach. He was already there.
He was a great coach. Right. He really was. And Guy V, you know, people, even though I didn't buy into this, all he does is roll the ball out. Well, no, he did a lot more than that. They were really good at pressing, really good at break. We all know the story. But probably not as, you know, probably got out-coached,
mm-hmm.
especially in the championship game.
Yeah.
The Cougars have the best coach left in the Final Four. That's the difference.
I think I agree. Right. Yeah. Bruce Pearl is maybe the one that you can throw out here. Todd Golden for Florida. I mean, he just recently kind of took over that and made, you know, has grown it.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Shire, even more recently, has taken over at Duke, even though he's had some good results. I think, Bruce Pearl at Auburn is probably the one that you compete with, but he does not nearly have the same amount of time put in and the ways in which I think Kelvin Sampson would have won a lot more if not for the couple of kind of violations that stymied his abilities to continue to grow what he'd been building in Oklahoma and Indiana, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think you're right. Like, you do have the best coach. He has, like, he's built a culture and an identity that I think looms larger than any of those other programs, with all due respect to Dukes, which, I mean, to be fair, John Shire, he got a chance to hand off in a way, as opposed to
he learned
build
from
it.
One of the masters.
He did. One that you would want to fight in some ways, but a master nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of wild, though, to have that perspective where I feel like you could confidently and easily say that Kelvin Sampson's the best coach, but he stands the same on a particular statistic that goes across all those dudes, which is none of them have won a championship. Like, no matter how this ends with a chalky Final Four, all number ones, it'd be one of these guys will walk out as a first time NCAA champion.
And you mentioned, Bruce Pearl. They beat the Cougars.
Early on
in the season here.
Toyota Center.
After fighting on an airplane, having to turn the airplane back.
That's
remember
right.
that?
Man, where does the time go? They really were fighting on a plane.
They
and
turned
then,
the plane around.
I don't even remember if it was the same dude or if it was a dude involved, but didn't they have a player who was just over there in the corner sulking because he wasn't getting the ball?
I don't know if that's the same guy or not.
Yeah, but they've gone through some things themselves. But that is a level of advantage that you're right. The Cougars have not had in any of these games. I wonder if that's enough to get them over in this way, because I do think that they've done things where they're able to win the first few possessions, and then in the way that they already limit possessions in a game, that's enough to kind of give them here some instances, right? And then give them some advantages is the word that I was looking for.
Yeah.
They're going to need advantages against this Duke team. This Duke team is really good. Well, and I think they match up well.
That's kind of like the shoe on the other foot back from the 80s in Fly Slamma Jamma. That was the most talented team, one of the most talented teams I've ever seen in my life. They're not the most talented team in this Final Four. But I don't think, you know, it's even close with Duke, you know, in terms of just sheer talent, length, you know, scoring ability, defensive ability, and all, but they have the best coach. They have the best coach left. And will that be enough? I think it could.
Which I feel like Kelvin's got to be super excited about, because he finally gets to that place where he gets to be the deciding factor in this if you're going to get this victory. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's been other instances where an injury has decided it. Obviously earlier on, just being able to try and get that talent level to a place where it matched, mm-hmm. was a deciding factor for him when he ultimately reached a place where the Cougs would stop. Now, it's not going to be talent that stops you. Well, I mean, I guess obviously you are still in a place where you'd probably say Duke has the better talent. But I think what's going to determine if they can get over in some ways is him as the coach. And I think that speaks to what he's built, what he's been able to get to. But I think that he's got to be very proud and happy of that. It gets to be put in his lap, in his hands in some ways,
and I
to get this over.
I got to believe even he would tell you this is the tallest task, no pun intended, you know, they've faced probably in 2 or 3
years. Coop?
Yeah. You know, the Cougs facing this Duke team. They're really, really good. You brought out the data. You know, top 10, was it, what was that, the numbers of the...
They're top five offense and defense?
Yeah.
The Duke...
No, of the top 10 teams in NCAA history.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. So when you talk about KenPom rankings is
Ken
what you're
Palm,
talking about.
That's what I was trying to say.
Of the top 10 KenPom ranked teams that have played in the tournament, at least
they're
as
like
far
three?
As KenPom. Yeah, they're up there, and I think all four of these teams were top 8.
Yeah.
So it's a great collection of talent, and I love that you can come with that collection of talent with these Cougs, and then you look up and you go, Kelvin, go win it for the boys.
Yeah.
Excited for that one on Saturday. Also excited and thank D&M Auto Leasing for the opportunity, as always, to talk to our fellas. Clint, talk to show. Fellas, what's popping?
Not much, baby.
How are you?
You know, good times.
So you and Jim Nantz in a fight.
Who you got?
I'll kick his old ass.
Ah, yeah! All right, well, how you going about it? I mean, obviously, you know where this is based off of. Bajani was out here talking that cold cash, you know what, about taking down Seth in a boxing match.
He said
match.
He would whip his ass.
He said he'd whip his ass.
Seth who?
Payne.
I mean, how did that come about? The smallest guy on the station and the biggest guy on the station.
I don't. What brought that up? No. Maybe it is being relatively
small.
They
were promoting a boxing match coming up in Katy. Okay. Or talking about it, I should say. And do you have the audio? We've traded.
Fig then got the hell out of here.
Figgy's not waiting.
He said
his weekend start today.
I'd whip his ass. So of course, it led us down this path.
Absolutely.
We're trying to see. He meant
hey,
that.
Sometimes Seth might take something like this serious.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with Big Seth.
Like, I don't know. Like, is he in on it?
But the question of the day ended up being, who in sports do you want to fight? And I said, well, Show's going to fight Jim Nantz, but who do you got?
I just want to have a few.
How
words.
Big is
he?
Does Nantz
he's about 6'4".
I just want to have a few
Nantz,
words.
So Nantz has got the reach and the
6'3", 6'4".
His ass is old.
I just got the red carpet. We're wanting to get into a controversy.
And I'll use weapons if I have a fight fair. I just want to have a few words with Jim.
You just shut up and let me do my
I like
job.
That. I just had.
I mean, we got
words.
Plenty of people around here who got like, his number.
No need for words, baby. Let's get to actions, baby. Let's get to actions.
Words with Jim.
Yeah. All right, so
we had a real misunderstanding.
That's right. All right, I know that I can be the instigator in some ways on the station. I understand. I accept it. But at one point in Seth breaking down the, oh, wow, you're all showing right. that you have. Yeah, don't put that too close to the cameras now.
I got it over
what
here.
What are you doing?
I got it over here.
You about to dox Jim Nantz. That's
I'll
crazy.
I'll leave a voicemail. Can we do that? Check the rules on that.
On the air?
Can I call him and leave a voicemail? There's no way he answers. Can I call and leave a voicemail? Can I do that on
the air? Yeah, I feel like you should check that out.
I think it'd be a great idea.
Hey, Jim,
I think
guess
it'd be worth
what,
it
man?
Yeah. Pay the fine. I'll help pay the fine, whatever it is.
It's a big fine.
Whatever it is, I'll help pay it.
I don't know if you want to. I don't know if you want to put your
stuff out there like that.
On that.
Yeah. I'll do a little research.
Yeah, let's find out what that number is. All right, so Clint, I just want to make sure that I was right. Because one of the things I said about you, obviously talking about boxing, talking about the guys at 6'10", I was like, look, I feel like at one point in your life, it wasn't just that you could fight, not saying that you can't still, but like you got a little jolly when you had an opportunity.
throw some
I would
hands.
Say I didn't look for it, but there was a time when it there was something in it for me. Something did it for me. We
were talking about how if anybody ever bloodied your lip, you'd taste it and go. Mm.
Yeah, that was one of those where like there's definitely a switch. A switch and it takes a lot to get there, but when it flips, it's
oh Clint, it's like, I mean, all right.
I even got my ass whooped a couple times and enjoyed it. I'll be honest with you. I'm not undefeated over here. In fact, I don't know that I'm above 500. I mean, it's one of those where afterwards you just feel a little more like a man.
Yeah, but that's really the secret in there, right? That's like really it's not that you above 500, it's that you can get in there and
you can hold your
mess
own.
Around.
I
mean, exactly.
Trust me, there's a... That old saying of I don't know if I can win, but you're going to know you was in a fight.
That's right.
We're talking about that, too.
I'm not one to walk around and talk about whooping ass, but you're going to know you got into something.
That was the thing about Bajani. That was the thing about Bajani. It wasn't that he said he beat Seth. Said he whooped his ass. And I bet
Bajani would hold him to a leg for a long time.
Bajani does seem like someone who doesn't quit.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Hey, hang on for a long time.
He does seem like... Like, you got to keep stomping his ass.
All right, fellas. Have a fantastic show. We're done for the day. We'll catch you tomorrow. You're listening to KILT AM, KILT FM, HD2 Houston, and Odyssey Sports Station. And right now, The Drive is live.